Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Fit Club, we talk food addiction, the art of compassion, and how your mental health affects your physical health with psychologist Dr. Sharon Burnett. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Fit Club.
I am feeling happy today at Fit Club. Thanks for watching. It's going to be great.
Okay, all right.
I'm your host, Fallon Mercedes. You guys can find me online at fitwithfallon.com. Here with my co-host. Where can they find you?
Shaka Smith. You can find me at Shaka Strong on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
And our lovely guest today is Dr. Sharon Burnett. Thank you for joining
us.
Thank
you.
What would you say, you're licensed psychologist?
I'm a licensed psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist.
Yeah,
so we're
going to...
legal
term for that.
We're going to go deep today. Yes. She's also the director and owner of West Valley Counseling Center. And I love everything that we're going to dive into today because on many of our Fit Club shows, we will touch upon how obesity, you know, it's an emotional component. Yeah. There's a big emotional component to it. And even what I went through on Fit to Fat to Fit, gaining the weight, I tell you, I was all over the place and weight and then losing the weight as well. So we're going to dive into more of that as well. But let's start off with some of our topics that we have. The first one kind of goes along with the song in the background. If you want to be happy and successful, you should try compassion. So out there right now, a lot of people are going through compassion training. A lot of people in the military, even professional sports teams such as the Cubs. The Cubs actually lost for many, many years and, you know, won the World Series. And, you know, they think it might be because of all their compassion training. What do you think of that?
Okay, well, that's a good question to start with. I'm going to start with a little compassion for myself because I'm like totally out of my comfort zone here with all the mic and the hookup.
You look like a natural.
I don't even know who I'm talking to. Like, I got a camera here. So having a little compassion for myself is a good start. It's interesting what they're doing with the pop psychology of compassion and the compassion training and the self-care. There's a lot of, you know, buzzwords out here. I love it because it's bringing to awareness. But to really know what that means, so starting with the topic of compassion, I actually think it comes from age-long Buddhist perspective of having that sense of compassion. And what that is, seriously, for me and for people I work with that I teach, is starting with compassion for self. Mm-hmm. And I mean, no joke, I have to sit here and settle and make sure that I'm good. And, you know, then I check out, make sure you guys are good. And so I can extend that care to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why people win doing that. Mm-hmm. But seriously, what it does is it makes us feel a little bit more real and connected. So mm-hmm. I can feel my own, like, slight anxiety level come down as I feel, okay, I'm good. I got Fallon mm-hmm. here. I got you here. I'm feeling, like, connected. We're all, we got a team. And it does bring us together. We're not doing it alone. So that compassion starting here and extending out for connection is what's important. And am I talking too much right now?
No, you're good.
Yeah. Okay, just checking. My compassion just went away from myself. The critic comes in.
You're doing great. But what's the difference between compassion and empathy? Because I hear that being thrown around all the time. But is there a real difference between the two?
Compassion and empathy, not getting into semantics, but I think it's the same thing. And, you know, to have empathy, I feel my pain, and therefore I can recognize yours, or my joy, and I can recognize yours. And, you know, we tune off. I watched this guy, Shaka. Thank you. He's like happy, so I can like attune to him and get happy. So that's a form of empathy. What I think is the opposite is sympathy. Mm. So sympathy is that kind of pity thing where I can feel, poor guy, he does not know what he's doing there. Yeah. You know, like, I'm over here, I'm not connected. So the sympathy and compassion and empathy are opposites in some way.
Got it.
At least different concepts.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are kind of turning to this compassionate training. Mm-hmm. It's because polls show Americans are getting less compassionate mm-hmm. as the years go by. So compared to 2009 to our present state, we are less compassionate.
Well, you see the division.
What do you think that is?
You see the division in our country. The politics alone mm-hmm. shows you that we've become a less compassionate country.
Oh, far more so. I said, and we can get into politics. That would be a whole other show. But we're losing our compassion because it's getting replaced by fear, which is a survival instinct. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all very afraid right now. And, you know, when we're afraid, when I'm afraid, I'm not really caring about what you feel. I just want to get out of here alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even care what I feel. So I think that's more what's happening on a national, global level or smaller levels, that we're so afraid that it's replacing compassion.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Now, this is just my thought. I noticed in the school systems, you grow up and you get taught a lot of things, but there's no focus on emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. So do you think this type of training, you know, to some degree is effective and what we need in our present state? Do you feel like, I mean, you're a therapist. I'm pretty sure you get a lot of people
who
come to
you. We talk about feelings sometimes,
That probably are not even in tune with their own feelings. So do you think this is necessary for the public?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, keep it in line with what your program here is in terms of happiness and growth. Yeah, we have to be able to recognize our feelings. Let me think for a second. Be able to have a language for them. Mm-hmm. It's really important. Just naming them, differentiating our feelings instead of like, God, you know, I don't feel so good here. Well, what is it I'm feeling right now? I'm maybe a little curious about what I'm feeling, a little compassion. Well, I'm feeling just like scared chillers because they have these cameras going on. You know, and I'm getting off track. So being able to recognize our basic emotions. One of my dear teachers years ago, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, talked about feelings and emotions. Of course, she's a psychiatrist. She talks about feelings, but she talked about, you know, our what she called God-given feelings, and I'll just talk, name the more natural feelings that we're born with, and we're born with fear, mm-hmm. you know, fear of loud noises, fear of falling. We're born with anger. That's kind of a protest. Oh, I don't like this. That's a saying no. We're born with love and joy. That's our ability to kind of connect. We're born with grief, which is, you know, grieving over something that's important to us to remind us of connections. And another emotion is kind of like a jealousy, a healthy jealousy, like, oh, I want to look like you.
I'm jealous of Shatha's muscles, too.
I want those muscles, you know. And that's our motivator. So if we distort those feelings or we don't recognize them, they get in all one big ball. They end up all fear or they end up all like, I can never be as good as either one of you. We get a lot of distortions, a lot of off track if we're not familiar with emotions. So part of my work as a therapist and part of my work as a human being is learning to, instead of being afraid of the feelings, learning to go, oh, I'm having a feeling about this. Yeah. And what is this? And what is this for?
Yeah.
And what do I do with it?
Yeah.
And I think it's important, like you said, to get it in school, because we do know a lot of our body issues are born when we're young. You know, they all these issues start very early in childhood. If you can cope with them then in a healthy way, maybe you don't turn to foods later on in life.
Absolutely. 100% right on. Yeah, and that being able to tolerate the feelings, be able to have a feeling, you know, and express it, because that's what we do with feelings. We yell, we cringe, we have emotional response. And then have that feeling and that response be met by attunement, empathy, and compassion from our parents. And then we learn, oh, it's okay to have these feelings. I don't have to hide them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to eat them away. I don't have to later turn to other addictions. So it gives us that resilience. It's, I can handle whatever's going on.
Yeah. And I find it interesting in the study that they really targeted all the compassionate training that they're giving to the military and to sports players. And I feel like those two professions or what they do, they're taught to be tough, to shove away their feelings, to not probably cry or show emotion. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that, you know, maybe it's a little poppy the way they're naming it, but
I think it's tremendous value to it.
Yeah.
I really do.
I definitely agree with that.
And not even taught that way. I think sometimes you do that as a survival mode of compartmentalizing certain things, especially in the military, where you kind of really try to separate yourself from what's happening. So I think we do that in a survival instinct, but not knowing how to actually deal with it in a healthy manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I said that kind of brings me to what we were talking about earlier is the impact of trauma.
Yeah.
whether it's with people returning from military or first responders in any field or children who are victims of childhood trauma, is that they're so overwhelmed by feelings, not just like, ah, I'm really annoyed I didn't get a parking place kind of feel, or, oh, God, that was a scary noise, but really intense flooding of feelings from very real trauma.
Yeah.
And if there isn't some outlet for that, some way to process those feelings, make sense of them, move through them, mm-hmm. there's no resilience.
Yeah.
And so we either die, you know, from addiction, self-injury, afflictions, or, you know, we shut down and disappear, or we take the trauma out on somebody else. So mm-hmm. that addressing feelings, particularly when there's trauma in the background, is critical.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. one of those addictions could be even food addiction.
Absolutely.
And when I was doing a little research on this topic, the thought crossed my mind, and I do work in the health and fitness profession, but, you know, sometimes I even think, is there really such a thing as food addiction? I know there's compulsive overeating. Mm-hmm. I know there's, you know, bulimia, anorexia, but is there such a thing as food addiction?
You know, it's controversial even in our field whether food abuse or misuse, eating disorders belong in the addiction field. I don't think they do. I mean, they certainly don't on a chemical basis. We're not altering our brain with alcohol as we do with alcohol mm-hmm. and drugs. So it doesn't always fit into the addiction model really well.
Mm-hmm.
It more into compulsive or misuse. But okay. at the same time, food soothes us.
Yeah, it doesn't like lights up our pleasure centers in the brain.
Right. It doesn't. Yeah. It does give some dopamine. I'm yeah. really happy when I eat chocolate cake.
Yeah.
I get really happy when I eat chocolate cake.
You know, just ask my staff. They hide little pieces of chocolate around if I'm crabby. It works every time. Eat some chocolate.
And I don't know if it's quite.
But
like
it's not an addiction.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an addiction, but with like high fructose corn syrup. We know it makes you crave more sugar. And so the more you have it, the more you crave more
yeah,
sugar.
Yeah, there's certainly some craving there. But, food and our use of food is much more complex because it's nurturing. You know, you go to somebody's house, here, go to your grandma's house, here, have some food. Did you eat? Have some more food.
Yeah.
Here, have some food.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Did you eat?
Yeah. And I find myself doing that to even people who come to my place.
You offered me popcorn when I walk.
Yeah, and I'm like,
here, want some popcorn?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's a health and fitness show.
Here, have some popcorn.
Yeah.
I took water instead. But coming back to how we use food to cope with trauma, to cope with uncomfortable mm-hmm. feelings, we do. We eat, and we have a little tiny brain in our stomach. Mm-hmm. There is proof of that. There's a lot of nerves there, and we get very anxious. We feel most uncomfortable feelings or mm-hmm. fun feelings in our stomach. So eating is a natural response. It soothes literally, you know, physically in our body, it's going to soothe us. You know, the alcohol, Coke, pot, all of that changes our brain. But I think food changes our stomach.
Ooh, I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah. Oh, God, I feel better. Okay, I'm grounded. I have some food in me. And then, you know, we learn, well, if I have a little bit more, then I'm not going to feel so lonely. And if I have a extra, you know, piece of that bread and butter, I'm going to feel really good and I'm going to feel kind of numb and I'm not going to feel anxious anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a big piece of cake for that man I really hated. He just broke up with me last week. I mean, we can, you know, so there, you can see how that use of food mm-hmm. is going to cover up the feelings. But so in that sense, it fits addiction model.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Yeah, I'm hungry now.
All right.
And then even in the opposite, I talked to you about this. My client who I had on the TV show,
mm-hmm.
He was the only client on the show who was starting to see success, losing weight, and then he quit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt was that he didn't know how to deal with all the emotions that were coming up, the different mm-hmm. things that he had been through, and he couldn't run to food to cope anymore.
Right.
Because I had taken that out of the equation. And it, you know, for so many years he was addicted to food. I mean, he was almost 500 pounds. So I think he got more afraid as the weight started coming off and he didn't know how to deal. And I've even seen the opposite, even with myself. You know, I had went through a breakup and I started hitting the gym hard mm-hmm. and I was doing good for a couple months. And as I was losing more weight, I started having these feelings and I was dreaming mm-hmm. and I'm like, why am I going through this? Why am I even thinking about him? I'm happy right now. I look good. I feel good. But I feel like I didn't deal with, you know, the, I guess, the process of grieving, you know, to some extent. But it's just, maybe you can elaborate how the losing weight and the gaining weight both...
It disrupts our metabolism on a lot of levels, but too, as we're talking about that too, is all of a sudden I'm not feeding these emotions, and so I don't know what to do with them. I'm not feeding them, nor am I starving them. That's the anorexic end of that. So I'm not feeding my emotions. So what do I do with this? Usually what I do with this is I eat. I'm not eating, so of course feelings are going to come up. That's natural. And even, I find with some people, even happy feelings are hard to deal with. God, I'm so happy. Oh my God, what's wrong? You know, or, you know, what's wrong? I feel good about myself. And so we're not used to those emotions. And it can be really disruptive if all of a sudden you've got these feelings coming up and everything else in your life is really sweet right now.
Yeah, it's like amazing. You're like, why am I feeling so good?
What do I do with this feeling of really good? Usually when I'm really happy, I go get a drink or I get a, you know, a piece of chocolate, or, you know, when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm angry, I go and get something to change that or to celebrate it. So you take that away, and the feelings are going to come up.
Yeah. So what do you do with the feelings then? How do you cope with them in a healthy way?
Feel them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most feelings that we have, you know, with the exception of the kind of fear that says, there's a train coming at me, I'm scared, I got to get out of the way, or a little bit of anger that says, I got to set a boundary here. Most of the feelings, we just let them pass. We just feel them. We'll grieve a little while. Pretty soon it's over.
Go back to the gym.
You know, hit the punching bag. Yeah. That's helpful. I got off track here. But, you know, learning to not see our feelings as something to be gotten rid of.
Yeah.
You know, like that most of our, this is very Buddhist too, most of our suffering comes from our reactions to our feelings, not the feelings.
And then I think it goes back to being compassionate to yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, it's okay that you're going through the motions. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you... you know, are feeling things that...
It's just a feeling.
It's just a feeling.
It's just a feeling, yeah. And it's often uncomfortable. And that's the key, is that instead of the uncomfortable, I've got to get away with this, meet your feelings with curiosity. What is this? And compassion. It's okay. It's just, you know, it's okay. It's a feeling. Remember how we used to kind of comfort babies when they have feelings? You know, so we just...
So I've seen, and I even know people who go to group therapy, but similar to like AA, Alcoholic Anonymous. But it's called Overeaters Anonymous. Do you think that type of group setting is beneficial, you know, instead of doing one-on-one or just dealing it on your own?
Dealing with it on your own is not very effective because it leaves us in that same, you know, we're by ourselves, isolated, and I'm bad, I have to get away from it. So that combination of both, you know, individual therapy, whether it's, you know, spiritual, psychological, emotional, but somehow, you know, addressing this dilemma of being a human being is helpful. And then in group, and what group does, we can't do as effectively individually, and that's move past the shame. You know, and get that sense of, oh yeah, you do that too. Oh my God, you think you don't look good all the time? I had no idea. Really? I mean, you carry this too. And so we're getting that you, me too, which is the compassion and the connection, and it's also gets rid of the shame, which makes us eat again, et cetera, and so forth. So it does that. It also, the AA programs make us accountable. You know, they use a little bit of shame to keep us in line. If you have that drink, you got to report that. But mostly groups, if they're run well and they're supportive, it gives us that me too, and it gives us witnesses to our pain. You know, somebody else can see me, and it gets rid of the shame, or at least reduces it a bit.
So,
I think groups are a critical part of our growth.
Yeah. I think a lot of people also don't correlate weight loss and their physical bodies, that there's a connection. And we've talked about this, the mind-body wholeness connection. Can you elaborate more on that in the sense of, you know, what would you prescribe for somebody to have, you know, a healthy mind-body connection? Would it be to do yoga? Would it be to, what would you
meditate.
Prescribe?
Yeah, meditate. Yeah, meditation is really, really good, seriously. That question, too, we have a mind-body connection. We live in our bodies all the time, and all of our feelings are in our body, and we lose weight. It's going to affect the feelings, et cetera. But I think just really recognizing that I'm not just a body, I'm not just a brain, I'm not just an intellect, I'm not just an emotional wreck, I'm all of these things. And the holistic approach or integrative approach in therapy is addressing all of those. I'm going to eat well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take care of my body. I'm going to sleep well. If I have a lot of stress or a lot of trauma, I'm going to get body work, massage, body work. I'm going to do some meditation, which quiets both the body, as you said, too, as well as the mind. Mm-hmm. So addressing every part of our being and not over-addressing one
just
part.
Just one
not,
part.
You know, I'm going to look really, you know, great physically, and I'm going to be dumber as shit because I don't read it. Or I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to use my workout instead of having some feelings. So it's got to be a balance. It's got to be a balance.
It's because of you that I now get massages.
Did you? Yeah, you did that, didn't you?
Yeah, because, you know, I tend to carry my stress in my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And you were explaining to me that, well, I told you, I don't like getting massages because they hurt.
Yeah.
And you told me that... I carry that. I have to feel that.
That you carry. We all do too. You can feel it now as a thing. But we carry a certain amount of stress. You know, certain. We carry stress in our body. It's not a certain amount. We always carry stress in our body. Different people carry it differently. I find people in the healthcare profession or fitness profession carry a lot in the shoulders because we're carrying a lot of weight. Or your own, you know, trauma. So yeah, you have to do some body work. You have to address the feelings in the body. And not just by working out more.
Yeah, I think we saw what I liked with the Biggest Loser. We covered the Biggest Loser, a season ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they have such a strong mental component of dealing with the contestants and their mind and their past traumas and getting their mind correct in a situation where they do are connecting the mind and the body.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that importance today. I love that it's playing out even in pop culture on TV as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I said this is. I think I'd mentioned that book to you. The Body Keeps the Score. Wonderful.
Still need to get that.
Yeah, wonderful psychiatrist who, you know, ties together the mind body healing very well. But in psychology, there's some excellent research that we can extrapolate from in terms of losing weight to the ACEs studies. Mm. That's Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. Mm. It's a study put together. I think it's by Kaiser and UCLA, or a couple big. I'm blanking on who put it together. But anyway, it's Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, and what it showed was that the more adverse childhood experiences an adult had, you know, loss of a parent, abuse, alcoholic parent, physical, sexual abuse, moving, societal world trauma, the more adverse experiences they had as a child, uncorrected, unrepaired, the higher the correlation they would have health issues later as an adult. Heart issues, cancers, asthma, emphysema, that it would come out in body trauma.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good science and research behind where that happens. I won't get into that now, why that happens. But you can see it. I see it clinically all the time. Somebody comes in and, you know, that depression takes over their body or that and leads to weight gain, leads to ill health, dis-ease. Yeah. On a physical and emotional physical and emotional basis. I'm getting tired, physically and emotionally at the same time, and intellectually. I mean, tonight I'm very tired, so my brain's not as quick. But it's that balance. So it throws us off.
Do you ever see? Have you ever seen clients unexpectedly get better physically because they were getting better mentally?
All the time, all the time. You know, and I can tell people when they've really worked through some stuff or dealt with whatever issues and processes and current losses are in their life, they come in, I can tell when they've turned that corner because they literally look brighter. Mm. Oh my God, you got this, you look good today.
Yeah.
You look good today. And we've heard that too. If you're happy inside, all of a sudden we look, you know, wonderful and happy. And so of course it shows and it changes the body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. That's my
so interesting.
That.
Yeah. And I know previous shows we've even I specifically remember this one topic that we talked about, how women who've had heart attacks, mm-hmm. who are in an unhealthy marriage or relationship, have I think it's like a 40% greater chance or 50% greater chance of going through another heart attack.
I would guess that's probably accurate. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the I'm being a scientist now, I haven't seen the literature on that, the research, but clinically I've seen that, and you see to that saying, we have die of a broken heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that. My grandma's dog literally died not long after she passed away, and she just looked broken. Mm-hmm. You know, her best friend was gone, and you see that even with couples.
You do.
One will die, then the other will die. It's just...
So if one's still alive and making you miserable.
Exactly.
Well, you know, that's a good point. But you hear people married 50 years and this nagging wife finally died and the husband dies 6 months later.
Yeah.
Because regardless of that relationship, there's that attachment. There's the familiarity. So you lose, you know, that partner. You do die of a broken heart.
It's crazy.
Or you said with somebody with, you know, cancer, a spouse has cancer, or... God forbid, the children have it. It impacts the whole family physically.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. You know, and I agree.
Depression's in the body. It's not necessarily in the brain. I mean, the brain chemistry, it triggers and affects it, but we're depressed in our body.
Yeah. Well, can elaborate on that. I've never heard that before. Depression is in the body.
Well, the same as any other feeling. That, you know, we get depressed not just emotionally, not just the blues, but our whole motivation, our whole sense of get up and go and do things is gone. And what do you want to do when you're really depressed?
Sleep.
Yeah,
it's sleep.
It's what I do when I get sad. I try this. I will go smile for 30 seconds, because they say if you smile for 30 seconds,
it
releases certain chemicals in the brain that will just make you happier anyways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll look in a mirror, try to smile for 30 seconds, and usually it works.
You know?
Absolutely.
I'll
have to try that.
Yeah.
30 seconds.
It does work.
Yeah, and
it
you feel kind of silly because like you're actually upset and like sad.
Yeah.
But so,
are you smiling?
So even that smiling, even that process and realization makes you a little bit happier.
Yeah, you kind of laugh at yourself.
Yeah, you laugh at yourself.
That's very true. But with what we you asked me a question about the depression.
In the body.
Depression in the body, not just the mind.
I completely forgot what I was going to say. I got all caught up.
But you said happy. It's you physically, you don't want to
be
active.
You take on the symptoms of depression.
You take on the symptoms of depression. You want to eat. You want to sleep. Back to
that's not just smiling
outgoing.
Thing to like, yeah.
It helps.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there's, you know, when there's a clinical depression, there's a chemical imbalance in the brain, whether it's genetic or chronic depression. That we can't smile away.
Yeah.
So if you see somebody truly depressed or deeply depressed, you go, hey, smile, dude. What, you know, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, that's can be really insulting. But with that depression, when it overtakes the whole body, it overtakes the mind, then it's really hard to get up and do the things that you need to do to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So that depression says, I'm too tired to go take care of myself. I'm too tired to go to the gym. Tired. I'm too depressed to eat right. I'm too depressed to, you know, cook myself food. So it inhibits our activity level and our ability to take care of ourselves, which adds to the depression. So you get caught in that depression.
Yeah.
Are there any sort of natural ways at home that you could do to alleviate that, or is like do you have to like use drugs, or you know what's any alternative or that you could try first? I would say
call a friend. Seriously, I mean it's call a friend. You know, that kind of going back to compassion and connection is to be able to make a connection. It's, you know, we can be so far down, the idea of calling anybody or doing anything is just out of the question. So if we can, you know, begin to reach out, we're not alone with it. But if we're past that level and we're just like on that kind of edge of depression, but we can get up and we can do something, then go to the gym if you can. Take a walk, get outside, sunshine, walking, moving your body, getting it going a little bit, feeding it a little bit better, not putting on a diet, but feeding it better.
Food, you know.
In a healthy sense.
It really, really affects your mood and how you feel.
Yeah, totally. So I said, I'm going all over the place because that's what my brain does at night, but not getting into that sense of diet, we should go on a diet and get better, you know, it just makes us feel more like a failure. But if you think about, let's feed my body a little bit better, I need some protein, I need some greens, I need some juice, I need some you know, better vitamins, let me get myself outside, not so that I, you know, can look really buff, but so I can move and get the pain out of my joints, get the pain out of my head. So getting into some kind of movement to counter depression is critical.
I see so many clients too, you know, who let's say have lost a job, and will start training with me. And, you know, it's a, when you get fired or lose a job, it does have an emotional impact on you. And, you know, I'll see them, they'll come in, they'll tell me symptoms. I feel tired all the time. I don't even want to wake up. And I automatically correlate that with some form of depression. And I'm not a, psychologist or anything.
No, but that is absolutely true, though. That's accurate. We can see depression. Yeah. We know when something's
depressed. And that's the smartest way to go about it, though.
Yeah. They'll train with me for 3 months. Oh, my goodness, I have so much energy. They'll come in the gym excited. You know, it's like they got their self-esteem back. They feel good. And they're applying for jobs.
And there's hormonal changes. When you lose a lot of weight, that changes your actual hormones in the body. Yeah. So,
It's just, and you've activated the dopamine, the serotonin, all the things in the brain that, that make us happy. And at the gym, you think about this too, or working with a trainer, which I still do because I love that, is that we're making a connection. You know, we're not doing it alone.
Yeah, a lot of my friends who are trainers say, I'm also a therapist.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I that's how we met, is at the gym. I go to the gym and I go, so I had this day. It's healthy.
You know, I think for me, too, I think my approach as a trainer is a little bit different. And I think I am so compassionate with my clients. I feel like I relate to them so much when they're like, you know, I had a bad day, when I'm looking at their food journal and I had this, and I'm like, you know what? I had a bad day too yesterday too, but I woke my butt up and I worked out and you gotta do the same. it's interesting to
So you have the empathy but no sympathy.
Exactly. You're still gonna give me 10 more. Sure. Let's go.
Yeah, that's loving discipline, but you still gotta get up and do it.
Let's talk about body shaming.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like we, or a lot of people, don't address this as much. And, you know, for those who don't work out or do work out, everybody, not everybody, I try not to, but, you know, everybody I think can look in the mirror and say, I wish this was different. This was a, you know, looked a certain way. I personally try to look in the mirror and, you know, not look at the flaws and try to love myself. But I see so many people who will body shame their own selves, not just other people.
Yeah, I body shame myself all the time.
So let's chat about how body shaming affects you mentally.
You look at our culture. We I'm going to come back to the reason for that body shame. We look at our culture, not just, well, most of the Western culture. We look at, this is the way a woman or a man is supposed to look. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you. You know, and it's so easy to just go with the physical and keep on shame and shame and shame. You know, that's partly a cultural thing. But, you know, the other part for that, too, is I think you were sharing a story of somebody you knew who, you know, grows up in a home where they've got one of the parents going, do you really want to eat that extra piece of cake there? You know, you don't want her to grow up fat, do you? You know, oh my God, you're awfully skinny. You should put some weight on. Where you know, parents or, you know, friends or whatever will start commenting on a body, and they create the shame right there. And it, even when you get to a 10 as an adult, you're still carrying that shame in there. You know, but no, we shame people all the time.
The reason why I became a trainer, one of them, was because I have many reasons why, but I lived in Dubai for a while. When I came back, I was overweight, and I was at a wedding, and one of my friends looked over and said, wow, you were eating good in Dubai.
You know what that means.
I was on that
shame, the next day.
But I brought her with me, and I actually got her to lose weight. I lost weight, and it opened up a whole new world for me.
You know, that was more of a wake-up and shaming question. Well, I don't know. You're not looking so good. You know, when it gets to, you said, when somebody is in really good shape, but they can never get perfect enough.
And
you
we
know,
see
I
that.
Look in the mirror and I go, yeah, but you just, you know, you could do this better. Then we're just caught in this need for perfection that we never reach it. Never reach it.
And we see that so much with competitors, bodybuilders, you know?
I take a picture of yourself. That's why I like taking pictures of myself, because usually the picture gives me a better perspective. When I'm in the mirror looking at myself, all kinds of thoughts. I look at a picture and go, was me?
Your pictures look awesome.
I was going to say, you look buff.
I think a lot of us, when we look at what we actually look like in a picture, especially all of us that have this sort of body dysmorphia to a degree, we would go, oh, that makes sense. So I think taking a picture can be a very effective way if you're suffering from that.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think that does help.
To see yourself realistically rather than the way you see yourself.
Or it can work at the opposite. Like you see, you look at the picture and go, oh my God, where's my trainer?
It might be and that might be the wake up call.
Be a motivator. But I think you can just come back to this, we're mixing a couple of things up, is that, you know, we can kind of look at something and want to look better, or look at something and go, boy, I've really let myself go.
Yeah.
This is not how I want to be. That's not necessarily shame, and that can also be motivation.
Yeah.
You know, but when we get into that place of, you know, there's not just something wrong with the way I'm eating, but there's something wrong with me because I'm not eating right. There's something wrong with me because I can't get perfect. Mm-hmm. And when I get perfect, I'll be lovable and everything will be great. That's a whole different thing. That's not motivating. That means no matter where I set the bar, I'm not going to meet it, and it's not going to be good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to be happy with yourself.
Yeah.
Start off that way, regardless of what you look like.
Yeah. And that's one thing I always practice to my clients. If I hear them making comments, oh, I hate the way I look. Oh, if they do a lot of, you know, bad self-talk, I'll tell them, if you don't love the way you look now, you're not going to love yourself when you get there.
Yeah. So true.
So if you start loving yourself now, you're going to love yourself maybe even more or the same when you get there. But even, again, when I was on the show and I gained weight, I would literally look in the mirror at my fattest and I would dress up, put on a sports bra, and try to look sexy.
Be the sexy fat
you
that you
love. And I was, and that's, people were like, how are you so happy? And
you're back to the self-compassion thing.
You're
back to saying, okay, this is as good as I can be today. It's not where I want to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not there yet, but I'm not bad where I am
but
right
today,
now.
But today, this is good. Yeah.
And I look at good. Actors, too. You know, I see some actors who are overweight, or they aesthetically, you know, are not the typical Hollywood image. They have a big nose, or they're, you know, just they don't really fit in. And I see those people who are constantly getting roles, and I'll look at them when they do interviews, and they have so much confidence. And I have some friends who are in the industry who stick out like a sore thumb, but their confidence and the love that they have for themselves, that's what sets them apart. Yeah. That's what makes them stand out in such a competitive industry. Because I've even seen the reverse, where I've trained clients who look like Barbie dolls, and, you know, they're not getting a lot of modeling or acting work, and I see the way they talk to themselves. Yeah. It's not loving.
No.
It's not caring. They don't have a lot of self-confidence. So it's just interesting how, again, back to the how you look at yourself and treat yourself has a big impact on.
Huge impact.
Yeah.
And I said, I like that, you know, that acceptance of just feeling happy with who you are is huge. I said, we can't all look like you, you know, and we get old, we go, oh, what the hell happened? But we can still appreciate where we're at.
Yeah.
You know, if we're all in that kind of healthy range of, you know, okay, I'm feeding myself well, I'm exercising well, I'm healthy, I'm not a model.
Yeah.
You know, and but this is for me the best I can be. I can be the best person I can be. Mm. You know, and some people never attain that, no matter where what their body looks like or what starring roles they get. They never get to that place of, I'm a good enough me right now. You never get to that place.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. The actors that have said, I'm a really good character actor. I'm really good with where I'm at right now. I'm a really good, you know, bad guy player. I'm a really good, you know, whatever role I play. I'm the best I can be for who I am is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
know?
I feel better already after this conversation myself.
Because we're
we got to have you on more often.
Yeah. Well, we started with a happy thing. Yeah. You know, you started with that happy song. So, trying to attune, like, you know, let's all get happy. And if I can't have fun with the work I'm doing, most of the time really enjoy it, in spite of some of the difficult things I encounter.
Yeah.
You know, we're missing out on that emotion too.
Yeah.
So gotta raise the vibration.
Let's be happy. Why don't you know, we can't have fun and. Why do this?
Well, I really want to just thank you for joining
us.
Thank you so much.
This wasn't as bad as
it's amazing.
Right? Like
there's one more quick question.
Sure.
For those out there, when would you say is a good time to go to therapy? Let's say somebody who is obese, who maybe shames their own bodies, who is working out, how do you know, okay, I need more than just the gym, more than a trainer. I need to see somebody to help address some of the things that I'm going through.
That's a really good question. How long do I have to answer that? you know, I don't know. You know, when somebody's really, really depressed or down, we're not going to go seek help. We're going to isolate. If somebody is feeling really good and working out, like, oh my God, I like this, we're not going to go get therapy.
Yeah.
You know, when we're on either extremes. But I think just recognizing what's in the way of my being a, you know, a better person or the best me I can be. Okay, I got my body in shape, but kind of still going home and you know, kicking my dog.
Yeah.
Or I'm still not where I want to be career-wise. When we're still not attaining the goals that we want and we don't know what the obstacles are, then that's the best time to take a look of, like, maybe there's another part of my mind-body I need to address. Maybe I do need to take that meditation class or get a massage or go talk to somebody and see what's, you know, what's coming up for me.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's just, it's being aware on, you know, the intellectual, spiritual, emotional level that we're all in balance. So.
Would you say everybody needs to go to therapy?
No.
Interesting. I didn't think you were going to say that.
But everybody needs, this is where therapists came about, everybody needs someone or once where they can go and say, can I just tell you about me right now? Can I just talk about,
I so agree.
I still need a buddy. So, you know, I need somebody to say, I need to just make this all about me right now. So back in the day when we had elders and witch doctors and respected, you know, tribes people and elders, and we could turn to them, we didn't need therapists. So I think in our culture, we've taken the place of that in a way.
Makes sense.
You know, but we're the priests, the witch doctors, the, you know, the wise elders, those things. So we've, I think we filled that gap a bit.
Yeah, makes sense.
So if we have that in our life, we really have somebody that can really see us and go, you had a really hard day, didn't you?
Yeah.
What can I do for you? You want to talk about it? You know, can you want to just cry? Or, you know, we don't need therapy then.
Yeah,
but...
So. For you out there who may need therapy, somebody to talk to, definitely give Sharon, Dr. Burnett, a call. She's over at the West Valley Counseling Center. She has a great staff.
I've got a staff of 20 wonderful therapists who all make me laugh and bring a lot of joy into my life. And they're good therapists. So, yeah, thank you for the plug for the center.
Thank you. Right. And then if you guys...
Thank you. This was not too bad.
No, you did amazing.
Okay, awesome. All right.
If you want to follow her center online, you can go to Facebook and just type in West Valley Counseling Center, and then you can find both Shaka and I, same place, same time, right here every Wednesday on Fit Club, or you can find me online at fitwithfallon.com or at fitwithfallon on social media.
And you can find me at Shaka Strong on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All right, thank you, Sharon.
All right, that was fun.
We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christian, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming. At King XO Bay. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay.
Hollywood.
Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.